Ballad of the Whiskey Robber is a cops and robbers story like none you've ever read. The cops are the robbery squad of Budapest, Hungary in the 1990s, underpaid and understaffed to face the crime wave that followed the collapse of communism. The robber is Attila Ombras. He had been so desperate to escape from Nicolae Ceaușescu's Romania that at age 21, he jumped a moving train and wriggled under it, inches from the track, to cross the border into Hungary. Once there, he sets up a string of adventures from playing second-string goalie for the championship hockey team to smuggling furs from Transylvania to a string of bank heists that made him a national folk hero. And it's all true. Ballad of the Whiskey Robber is Julian Rubinstein's first book, and he joins us from NPR's New York Bureau. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
This is a complex story. Anyone who wants all the details should read the book. What's the point of the story?
To me, this is a story about so many things. It was just, on one level, it was just a story about one of these just incredible crime stories. It also was a story that encapsulated an entire era, and quite a colorful and chaotic one at that. And then also, I thought it was a very universal story of this really archetypal underdog character who came from practically nowhere and nothing and ended up, in the most unlikely way, this symbol of his whole people.
When you're describing Attila breaking out of Transylvania, Romania, where he grew up, you write, and all of this to get from one communist dictatorship to another.
That's right.
So what was the difference?
Attila is a Hungarian, but he grew up in Transylvania, which is now part of Romania, in an area that's almost entirely Hungarian, under Ceaușescu, as you mentioned. Ceaușescu was a horrible dictator for anyone, and especially if you're a Hungarian. And basically, Attila had very little family. I mean, he was extremely poor, had almost nothing, and he basically decided to take his life into his hands to get to Hungary, where at least he felt like he would be part of a place that was his nationality.
And did it work out?
He's so determined, has such a huge heart, that it didn't really deter him so much, but it was extremely tough. I mean, here's a guy who literally worked the following jobs: gravedigger, church painter. His first job with the hockey team was driving the Zamboni. And in fact, the reason he so badly wanted to be a part of the hockey team, and it also factors into his whole reason of wanting to go to Hungary, he also wanted to belong somewhere, and he wanted... Actually, the best place to belong would be a hockey team. And actually, the team, which at the time was the national champions of Hungary, I mean, they were the very best team in Hungary. And here's this guy. They were actually also so sort of touched that this crazy guy, who with almost no experience, wants to play hockey goalie for them. And so basically, they did give him a job with the team, not as a player, but actually as the janitor, where he, among other things, drove the Zamboni.
How did he start knocking off banks?
Well, he was a freelance fur smuggler. He basically set up his business where he was driving this huge, long, and actually very harrowing route from Transylvania into Austria, selling these pelts for actually a pretty decent profit. But the problem was he was having to bribe the border guards over and over to let him through with these illegal furs, and also because he didn't have, even at that point, his Hungarian citizenship. So he actually wasn't supposed to travel across the borders like that. He was supposed to have permits every time he did it. And basically, these payoffs and the bribes to the border guards were falling through because the guards were getting in trouble. So he finally found himself quite in debt after that fell through. He'd also, by the way, at this time started gambling, which became a real vice of his. And so he basically resolved that he was just going to knock off this one easy post office near his apartment. And it was actually very difficult for him to get into the mindset to do it, even though he'd sort of lived on both sides of the law before. But it was actually too easy, probably. He was able to do this, and it sort of one thing led to another. And before he knew it, he was living this double life, robbing banks, post offices, sometimes a travel agency, and also playing for the hockey team.
He was pretty good at it. Describe his MO.
Well, the thing that made him such a good robber, and he's arguably one of the best bank robbers, certainly in modern history. I mean, he pulled off, 29 rather incredible bank robberies, working usually alone, occasionally with an accomplice, but he didn't have any sort of real criminal enterprise with him. I mean, he was left to figure out how to do things. And what he did was he scouted so carefully. For him, it was all about planning, and especially escape routes. But he literally made what I referred to as basically like an encyclopedia of Budapest's financial institutions. He spent almost every night for a number of years at like 3 a.m, he would get up and go out driving around and doing diagrams, marking down things such as how many video cameras, how many streets were out there, how many guards were working there, if any. And at first, by the way, there were none. And how many employees worked there, and women versus men. And I mean, he had every detail down. And then he basically would go in disguise. Often, quite especially in the media, there was being referred to as a gentlemanly manner. He once literally handed flowers to tellers. He once left bottles of wine for the investigators, who he knew would show up soon after he left. And he sometimes, you know, sweet talked his way into it, and he sometimes just sort of overpowered people by shocking them with his quickness. But he never hurt anyone. That was something he decided from the beginning. He was not interested in ever hurting anyone. In over 7 years, no one was ever hurt.
How did he get the name Whiskey Robber?
Witnesses started really giving police pretty good information. And one of the things that they repeatedly were telling the police was that they saw this guy who had just robbed the bank doing double shots of whiskey at a bar across the street before he went in. And so the media dubbed him the Whiskey Robber.
How does his public image start to build, even when his identity isn't known?
One of the most interesting articles that appeared, and there were several that were chronicling his exploits early on in rather funny ways. One of the really interesting articles appeared in 1996, about midway through his streak, and the article said, "It's not unlikely that he's giving his money to the poor." And that really talked to what kind of figure Attila became. The truth was, he wasn't giving his money to the poor, but people were ready to believe it, you know, and they wanted to believe it. And he became not a Robin Hood in the way we think of a Robin Hood at giving money to the poor, but he became a Robin Hood in the way of being a hero to the people. And that's, I think it really sort of started with at least the sentiment that was expressed in that article about midway through his streak.
One of the themes that you hit fairly hard is that while Attila Umbrus was being sought and tried and sentenced fairly severely for less than $1 million in theft, several white-collar criminals looted a lot more and got off scot-free. What's the message in that?
Well, as Attila even pointed out, because his sentence was actually even longer than some murderers in Hungary, he gave an interesting comment to a media outlet in Hungary in which he said, "Human life is worth less than money." You know, we have it here even in the States, too. I mean, you know, there are a lot of times power and money can buy you freedom. And Attila didn't think that he should get off. I mean, he actually pled guilty to everything. And he understood that he would go to prison, but he wanted to point out the hypocrisy, and it is a hypocrisy, you know, and it certainly goes on there, and it doesn't only go on in Eastern Europe.
And still, you write that this string of 29 bank robberies could only have happened at that time in that place.
Why? That was one of the most special things about this story that I love so much. I really do feel like this story sort of took place in this geopolitical hiccup in time. I mean, here you had the security. There was almost no security when he started robbing. The police force was totally underfunded, understaffed, untrained. You had the proliferation of this new tabloid media. And so you had all these factors that just created this circumstance where this guy just happened to appear at this time, and this incredible series of events happened, and he became this figure. I don't think it could have happened at any other time or place. And to me, it was interesting because the question of, was he really lucky or unlucky, or was it funny or sad? And, you know, when I thought about those things and writing this story, it reminds me that one of the things that I thought about when I was writing the story and really trying to find the tone of it was, it might sound strange, but it was the movie Life is Beautiful. And the reason was because it took this incredibly horrible story and it presented it in this most unlikely way, in this, with this humor, and it was hilarious at times. And I saw both sides in this story as well. I mean, to me, this story was sort of a heartbreaking story, but it was also so absurd and hilarious in so many ways. And that was the sort of the tightrope I tried to walk in doing this book.
Julian Rubinstein's first book is Ballad of the Whiskey Robber, a true story of bank heists, ice hockey, Transylvanian pelt smuggling, moonlighting detectives, and broken hearts, published by Little Brown and Company. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.